This is a big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Thanks so much for listening. We've had a lot of space news in the last week, mostly because of a couple of disasters. One, the Antares rocket that blew up as it was taking off from Virginia last week. And then just on Friday, the crash of Virginia Galactic's Spaceship Two. This all happened to coincide with my next guest's appearance on this show, and in fact, her appearance in St. Louis tonight. Her name is Lynn Scherr, a Peabody Award-winning journalist and author who spent a couple of decades doing all sorts of stories for ABC's 2020. And she's got a new book called Sally Ride, America's First Woman in Space. She will be talking about it at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival tonight at 7 p.m., and I'm happy to have her back on the show. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, I'm so glad to be with you.
Nice to talk to you again. Before we talk about recent NASA history, take me back to 1983, when Sally Ride did become our first woman in space. And even before that, why did it take 20 years after the Russians had sent up Valentina Tereshkova for us to put a woman in space?
Oh, what a good question. You know, if we had the answer to that, we'd solve all the Earth's problems. NASA was a boys' club, a white boys' club while we're at it. It got started during the Cold War, when the race with the Soviet Union after they put up, of course, the Sputnik, the first human-made satellite in space. And the race to the moon was very much a Cold War, who can get there first kind of thing. This was not seen as a grand adventure and something to involve everybody who was eligible. It was made available to test pilots, to jet pilots, and these were all men, essentially white men at that. So women were simply excluded, although NASA never said we're not hiring women. They just didn't do it. And finally, in 1976, NASA put out a call for a new group of astronauts to fly what was then the upcoming space shuttle program. There would be more space inside, more room inside. The crews would be larger. And they no longer needed people just to be pilots and commanders. You didn't have to have a military test pilot background. What you needed to be was a scientist and somebody with a lot of brains and a lot of ambition and a lot of energy. And so they opened it up to women and minorities. And Sally, of course, was one of the first six women chosen to be in NASA's space shuttle program.
So how hard was it at that point to break through the white male culture at NASA, even though they were admitting African-Americans and women and others who had never been represented in the Corps at that point? Still, you got a locker room full of guys.
You did. And in fact, funny you should mention locker room, because one of the first things that changed at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, thanks to a woman named Carolyn Huntoon, who was the management person who became sort of the unofficial den mother to the first six women and all the women, thanks to Carolyn, there was now a women's locker room in the gym at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. So this is something that had never occurred to these guys, to put in a women's locker room. There were a lot of little things like that, but the truth is, once NASA made up its mind to accept women, the training was entirely equal. There were some little adjustments that had to be made in terms of, you know, the personal toiletries kit that went up in space with them. But mostly, it was pretty much a level playing field once they let the women in. And that was the big deal for NASA to say, you know, we need to give women a chance. We need to give minorities a chance. And of course, once Sally flew in June of 1983, the door was wide open. She burst through the celestial glass ceiling and said, not only to other women in NASA, but to women around the world, you can do anything. If I can do this, you can do anything. And that's really the icon that she became.
Now, you know a little bit about being a woman in a man's world, or what had been a man's world, because of your early days in television and in journalism.
Right.
I seem to remember that Sally Ride was not treated so well by the guys in the media when she was coming up. She certainly wasn't treated the way the men were.
No, in fact, there were some, and I'm sorry to say this, but it was almost entirely men in the media who were much less comfortable with the idea of a woman in space than were the engineers and her colleagues at NASA. And they asked her truly the dumbest questions imaginable. Someone actually asked if she expected to see any UFOs in space. Someone asked, how she felt about being the only woman on a crew of five, four men, of course. Sally responded to the former about the UFOs. No, she didn't expect to see any. And as for a crew of men, she said, look, I'm a graduate student in astrophysics. I'm used to being in a classroom full of men. It's not going to be a problem. The men in the media, I would say also, the single dumbest question ever asked at a press conference anywhere, and I've been to a lot of press conferences, was the one that was asked right before she flew. So now it's May of 1983. She's about to fly in June. She's been training for an entire year with her crew, four guys, and lots of other people. And this guy from Time magazine actually said to her, Dr. Ride, you've been training for a year. It's very intense in the trainer. When something goes wrong, when there's a glitch, how do you handle it? Do you weep? Yes, exactly. I was sitting in the room at that moment, and like everybody else in the press corps, rolled my eyes and groaned. Sally, to her credit, smiled, giggled, turned to her right, to Rick Hauck, who was the pilot of her mission, and said out loud, why doesn't anyone ever ask Rick these questions? So she got by it. I would have clawed the guy's eyes out, but Sally got by it, which is a tribute to her.
You know, I hold her in great esteem, and I had the chance to talk to Dr. Ride a couple of times. But I wish when she was asked about being in space with four men, I wish she had said, well, we do have something in common. We're all attracted to women.
Oh, but interesting.
But she did not say anything about her sexual orientation.
No, and in fact, you know, while she was flying, she was married very happily to Steve Hawley, another astronaut. Sally had, as I reveal in the book for the first time, had a relationship with a woman before she got to NASA while she was still in college. She had also had relationships with men. And it was only after she flew and after all that that she formed her lifetime partnership with Tam O'Shaughnessy, the woman she'd be with for 27 years.
Yep.
And I think the truth is, I think there are two truths here. One is, Sally was a very private individual. She thought her sexuality was her business and nobody else's.
Yep.
And the other was, of course, it was a very different time. We're talking about the 80s. And I think that Sally was probably going through some questioning of her own. Who was she? What did she want to do? Where did she want to be? And when she settled in with Tam, she obviously made a decision, but it was not something she chose to share with the world.
Yep, and that's absolutely her right, as it is everybody, to talk about their personal life or not. But I did think it was very moving when a couple of years ago, President Obama awarded her the Medal of Freedom posthumously and gave it to Tam O'Shaughnessy.
Indeed, and, you know, think of how our society has changed and how the culture has become so much more tolerant of all sorts of things that we used to consider other. And as I say, Sally was intensely private. She was an introvert in her DNA, very shy. And this is just not something she was going to share with anybody. And so part of what made writing the biography so difficult was that Sally never talked to anybody about it, hardly, not even Tam, really. And so it was a matter of triangulating a lot of things and making some very good, educated guesses. Because this was not something Sally discussed in her lifetime. But clearly her deeds show where she was and what she cared about. She was obviously in love with Tam, and that's the life she chose to lead. And she chose to lead it out of the public eye.
I mentioned at the top of our conversation two problems that NASA's had in the last week. They're both actually private companies that had the problem. Orbital Sciences had their Antares rocket that was going to go up to the International Space Station with supplies blew up after it, or had problems and then was blown up after it left the pad in Virginia last week. And then on Friday, we had Virgin Galactic Spaceship 2 encounter some problems and end up crashing. All of this ties in with Sally a little bit because her first two times in space, she was on board the Challenger, and I think she was supposed to be getting ready to go for another trip at the time that the Challenger explosion happened in January of 1986, right?
Yes, she was in training for her third mission when Challenger exploded in 86. You're exactly right. She then, as you of course know, served on the commission investigating the Challenger crash, was very instrumental, and I reveal a very key thing that she did in the book for the first time to understand what happened. And then a year later, Sally resigned from NASA because with the agency shut down, she didn't want to wait a year before she started training again and before she could fly again. Here's what was important, though, about Sally is she was deeply disappointed. She was horrified by what happened with the Challenger explosion because, as it turned out, that was really human error. That is to say, it was management error. It was not pilot error. Yes, the hardware failed, but it failed because of management error. And she was furious about that, and yet she didn't say, I'm out of here, goodbye. She said, let's fix it, let's make it better. And she worked very hard to change the atmosphere, to change the lines of command, and all of that happened. And NASA flew very successfully again for until 2003 when the Columbia exploded. And once again, they had slipped back into that same mentality. Ultimately, Sally was on that commission as well, and they got that fixed. So there were two horrible accidents of the shuttle while Sally was there. Human lives were lost, and they shouldn't have happened. But her attitude was not scold NASA. It was make it better.
Right.
And I think she would look at what happened with the Antares and with Virgin Galactic as by way of saying, look, we need private industry. We need commercialization of space. Government can't do this alone. If the accidents are going to happen, let's hope they happen without any loss of human life, and let's get it fixed.
Yep.
And because that's the future. She believed in two things for the future. One was commercial. You had to have private industry involved. And the other is she believed very strongly in globalization, that there had to be international cooperation. No one government, no one country should do this alone. And where we should be beyond a space race. We should be beyond the point where it's individual countries fighting for their piece of outer space. We know now that we are one planet, and at least in this area, we should be working together. That was her theory.
That's a great lesson for everyone to remember, and it's also important to remember our history and remember how many accidents there were before we put Alan Shepard and John Glenn and the rest of the Mercury 7 in space 5 decades ago.
Exactly right. We lost a lot of robotic spacecraft. Notice I said the word robotic. Sally mm-hmm. was very firm in the idea that we shouldn't say unmanned. We should say robotic. It's a very good word. Just thought I'd pass that on to you.
I like that. She leaves behind a legacy of science and exploration for girls and young women and everybody. She wrote 7 books for kids and was a real hero with a capital H in my eyes. So I'm really glad you wrote this profile of her. Profile seems like it's an essay. It's not. It's a full book, an in-depth look at the life of Sally Ride, America's first woman in space. Lynn Scherr will be talking about it at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival tonight at 7 o'clock at the J. Lynn, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Great to be with you again.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTR.